Okay, good morning everybody. I'll continue with where we left off. We were talking about preparing food for Shabbos, and we spoke about how a person should organize financially, that he should be able to prepare enough food for Shabbos, whether we say Asei Shabbos Chol V'al Tasaret Lebrios, or we say whether you should make your Shabbos stick, your Shabbos more weekday dig and not come to go and rely on other people for help, or we say Levo Alei V'ani Porea, borrow on my Cheshbon Hashem says, and I'll pay you back. We said, just to say it in short again, what we spoke about is that when a person has enough for two meals, but not enough for three meals, so then Asei Shabbos Chol, make your Shabbos a weekday event, meaning you don't have the third meal and you don't go collecting. But if a person does not have enough for even two meals, so then he should see if other people can help him. And when at that point, then he's mechuyav to go get three meals. We said a person does not have to go collecting. That's not a chiyuv. Only we said for Shabbos candles, it was a chiyuv to go collecting, but he should go borrowing. And we brought a machlokas whether you borrow based on the fact that you know that you have the possibility of your future paying it back. That means that right now it's not liquid. He has money, either a debt that's been owed or money invested somewhere and it's not liquid. And therefore he has no money for Shabbos, so he goes and borrows and he tells the creditor that I have means to pay it back, but it will take a while. And on that, Akash Baruch Hu says, Levo Alei V'ani Porea, you'll see it will work out and you won't have to liquidate your investment. Or there's a sheet that holds, not even if you don't have what to pay it back, you should borrow. But Chassid Shalom, a person should never borrow and with the intention of never paying back. That's a terrible thing. But rather, you should tell the lender that I'm borrowing for Tzarkei Shabbos, and you should know, as of now, I don't have any means of paying back. So when the person gives it, he knows our das came knowingly that he's giving it to someone who doesn't have the means to pay it back, and for that, the Kohen Gadol says, we'll help you find a way to pay it back. That was the bottom line of what we ended off last week. Rav Novad, when he gets to this point, he says a couple of things that have to do with the food. He gives, for example, he says a person should be makbid on the kashrus of the food that is serving for Shabbos. Otherwise, yotzei shcharo behefsedo, the gains that you have of having lots of extra and delicious yummy food, you lose out by the fact that it was properly kosher. Therefore, he points out a couple of things. For example, this is common shaylus alagavi ovens. Ovens, not everybody has multiple ovens, milchik, shleishik, and parov, and therefore you have to be aware that you should not cook obviously milk products and meat products in the oven at the same time. They're for sure not, but even one after another should not be done. And even to cook parov in an oven that was used for something else beforehand can cause that parov food to take on the status of the food that was cooked before it, unless the oven has been kashered. There's different ways of kashering ovens. The common accepted way, let's take a minute off and just talk about kashering. Chazal have a rule, kabola kach polta. The way the taste went into the item is the same way it will come out. So when something was used with a liquid pot, you cooked something inside it, so the way to get the ta'am, to get the taste, the flavor of the previous food out of it, whether it was fleishiks and you want to make it milchiks, or it's treif and you want to make it kosher, or it was chometz and you want to make your pesach dik, the way to do it is to immerse that utensil in boiling hot water, and that will cause the flavor to come out. So we say the same way it went in through the means of a boiled, it was water, so it comes out with water as well. Whereas if the flavor went in through heat, dry heat, meaning that something was baked or fried, is a shaila, because there's oil in the pan. The question is how much oil there is in the pan. So let's leave those. We're not going to go into all the details of Yoredeya now, but if something was done dry, so then the way to kasher it is alidei libun, and that is actually what we have. Libun, we divide into two groups. We have libun kal and libun chomor. Libun kal is getting the item hot, and it causes the bleus to come out, but that only works for something which needs hagola, something which you could kasher with dipping into hot water. So you could also just heat the item to libun kal. Exactly how hot that is one of the descriptions is that you get it to the heat, that where you to put a piece of straw on it, the straw would burn. But if the absorption was done through dry heat, dry connection, dry heat, like baking, then the only way is to do it at a day level chomo, which basically causes the metal to glow. And most poskim say that's around 400 to 500 degrees Celsius. The only case we have that in our homes is someone has a self-cleaning oven that would reach Libun Chomor, and then there's a whole list of laws, when you can do it, when you can't do it, people are chasim amoinam, things that you could do Libun to, but people don't because they're afraid they're going to break, etc., etc. So there's a whole set of rules there, basically ask a shayla, but we're just giving some guidelines just to understand. So an oven essentially is dry heat, and therefore you need Libun Chomor. So if you have a self-cleaning oven and you set it onto the self-cleaning setting, then you have kashas your oven l'choladeus. What do people do when they don't have a self-cleaning oven? So then they rely on a svara of kabbalah kachpolta, the same way it went in and went out. So if you put your oven onto maximum heat, so then you never had heat, flavor going in at hotter than this. So you're using the same heat that could have been, that got it to go in to get it to come out. It's a bit of a cooler that people rely on b'shas atzfak because they can't afford multiple ovens. But you should know that in order to kasher an oven like that, you have to have it perfectly clean, and all that you're dealing with is blias, meaning the flavor that's absorbed in the utensil itself, in the walls and the trays, etc. But if you actually have food remnants on the inside the oven, it won't help to heat it to its full heat and leave it, unless you do leave in chomer, because then it actually destroys the food. The food turns to ash. People have told me who have self-cleaning ovens that there's always a small layer of ash at the bottom of any residue that was ever there is totally burnt out. So there's a lot of work involved. You have to clean the oven first, and then you kasher it. That's why it is often recommended by Rabbanim that people should try not to rely on kashering ovens and changing them from one thing to another. There is another point, is that although theoretically you could have one pot in your house and every 24 hours change it, we wait 24 hours between kashering because we want the time to become pogum. Once it's past 24 hours, it's not considered good flavor anymore. But essentially, you have one pot, one day you use it for flasics, one day you use it for milchics. So they're told us not to do that because it's going to cause mistakes. And therefore, they said that if you're kashering for a different reason, something became treif, and now you're kashering it, and before it was flasics, now you can use it for milchik. So you're kashering for Pesach, so it was chometzik, and now you're kashering for Pesach, so if it was milchik, you can now use it for flasics. But stamas that you decide to change from milchik to flasics, or flasics to milchik, the minig is not to do. If something was pyrav and became milchik, so you want to make a pyrav again, that's fine. But change from milchik to flasics to milchik, that we avoid doing unless you're kashering anyway for a different reason. So ovens can be problematic because they're dirty, and once they're dirty, then you have actual food particles in the oven, and therefore kashering becomes difficult. And you have to always consider that the oven is the status of that food inside. So if you have an oven that you use for flasics, and there's bound to be fats from the flasics that you've made in the oven, so therefore the oven is always considered flasics. If you make pyrav inside it, that food comes out b'cheskes flasics, and if you make milchik inside it by mistake, that food will come out to be treif. If you cover the food, then we say that the food that's covered doesn't get the time of the oven, so therefore you can put a milchik addition to a flasik oven if it is properly covered. He doesn't bring it, but I've seen some people make it to put double covering so that you don't make mistakes. If you have a flasik oven that's been out of use for 24 hours, and then you bake something pyrav inside it, so there are those who hold that that item is not enough flasics to ask you to eat it even with milchiks. That means usually if you made, for example, you made your challis in your flasiger oven, so those challis should be considered as flasics, and you should only eat them at a flasiger meal and should not eat them at a milchiger meal. They don't make you flasics that you've got to wait between meat and milk, but you shouldn't eat it together with milchiks. Whereas if your oven was out of use for 24 hours before you made the bread, and now you bake the bread in it, yesh omrim, there is a mokum to be made or that you can eat that challah with milchiks. Okay, that's the end of preparing food, and now we'll get to the things that one should not do on an Erev Shabbos in order to make sure that you have the right cover Shabbos. So the first thing we're going to talk about is taking a journey on Shabbos. Chazal told us that a person should not embark on a journey that is longer than 3 parsa on a Friday so that he has enough time to cook for Shabbos. The 3 parsa, a parsa is made of 4 meal. A meal is made of 2,000 amos. And therefore, a parcel would be 12 mil, which is 24,000 amas, which comes out to approximately 12 kilometers. An approximation, obviously, there's different sheets and how to work it out. And the question is, did Chazal say that this is a distance or a time? And essentially, we learned that it's a question of time. But there's an interesting bach over here. He holds that if a person is traveling by horseback, then he can travel longer than this time. What do I mean by that? Is that Chazal wants to make sure that a person has the time and energy in order to prepare for Shabbos. If he goes on a journey in the morning, then it's going to cut the amount of time that he has available to prepare for Shabbos, and it will take a sap him of his energies, and he might have to rest before he gets to cooking, and preparing, and cleaning, whatever else he has to do. Therefore, when a person is going by foot, it's quite clear that he shouldn't travel more than 12 kilometers. Let's call it 3 parasol, and that is approximately 4 hours, a little less than 4 hours, about 3.5 hours, 4-hour journey from the beginning of the day. So if sunrise is at 6, he should be by his destination by 9:30, 10 o'clock. However, the Bach says that you can take both things into account, not only time, but also effort. Therefore, the person goes on horseback, since you can travel much further because it's less exertion if you go on horseback than if you walk on foot. And we know that horseback also takes an exertion, might be less than walking, but it does take an exertion. So if you go by car, which also can be tiring if you do a long journey, but it's less so than horseback, which is less than walking. So yesh matirin, that if you go by car, that you can go a little bit longer. The question is how much longer, and basically those who are makel say that at least you should get to your destination while the day has still lots of time in order to prepare. Now this, we're going to explain in a minute, but this is talking about someone who is traveling, and after he's traveling, he's going to prepare for Shabbos. What about if you're going away for Shabbos? You're going to a hotel for Shabbos. There, the food is cooked for you. Children are going to their parents for Shabbos, or parents going to their children, whatever the case may be. So then, the need to prepare for Shabbos is different, because someone else is cooking, or the husband is going on a business journey and his wife is at home cooking. So then we don't have the same thing. This restriction that we're talking about is for someone who has not yet made any Shabbos preparations. Chazal said, make sure you make it back on time so that your Shabbos preparations will be completed in time. But someone whose Shabbos preparations are done or being done by someone else, so he doesn't have this restriction, and he may travel later into the day as well. And there, Chazal don't give an exact definition of how long in the day you can travel. Theoretically speaking, you can travel for candle lighting, and then as long as you arrive in time for candle lighting, you're fine. But obviously, a person has to use his seichel or know that if he wants to have a shower, then he has to come arrive in enough time in order to wash himself. And if he needs to cut his nails, which is a mitzvah to do on Erev Shabbos, or he wants to a haircut, or whatever it is, or something that he's going to be doing for Shabbos, he's going to a place where he's got to make his own bed. You've got to come in enough time to be able to do that. Today, most of the Rabbonim say, obviously, that you don't travel out of town late on a Friday because of the problems of being caught in traffic and who knows what. I heard a getter, I don't remember now anymore in whose name it was, that he said, you take a journey and you see what is considered the longest expected time to do that journey, and that's the minimum you should allow yourself. So not the average, but the longest. So for example, to go from here to Yerushalayim, when there's no traffic and you're going at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can do it in 35, 40 minutes. But if, or as was with us, I remember going in an ambulance on a Shabbos morning at 12:30 on a Shabbos morning when one of my daughters were born, it took us 25 minutes from here to the Bikkurim Hospital. That's not what you take into account when you're preparing on Friday to take a trip to Yerushalayim. But on the other hand, my children went to Yerushalayim a few weeks ago, a week where there was that infamous accident where that baby was killed and the mother subsequently died, and the father unfortunately is still in hospital, even though like three or four weeks since then. And the highway was closed, and they left here, I think it was 1-ish, and they got to Yerushalayim at like 4:30. It took them 3.5 hours. Now that is not the regular, but it's normal. If there's an accident, and accidents happen, it takes their time. There were times where I remember on a different time traveling to Sri Lanka, there was a fire on the highway. The truck was carrying hay and it caught fire. And it was quite a wildfire. They had to close the highway and there was no access to Sri Lanka for many hours. So according to that rule of thumb, you would say that you should at least count on 3 hours, 3 to 4 hours, if you have to go to Sri Lanka. You tell me it's a half an hour journey, but you know, first of all, it's half an hour in the middle of the night with an ambulance. But during the day, it takes close to an hour, and things happen. Things happen often enough that you have to keep it in mind. And I think the Rabbonim feel that this issue cannot be stressed enough because, unfortunately, people are not careful with it. And there have been awful stories of people forcing taxi drivers to take them into town, and the taxi driver then has to get back home and has to drive after this man, and they're not in trouble, but they got out the taxi 10 minutes before Shkia, but the taxi now had a 15-minute drive home, and he got home 5 minutes after Shkia. That's terrible. If your taxi driver is Jewish, irrelevant of whether he himself personally keeps Shabbos or not. There's been stories of bus drivers that got caught in traffic and arrived at a town and told everybody, okay, here's the entrance of town, everybody out, I need to get home. And they said, no, you're a bus, you have to go according to the route and you have to drop us off. And the poor bus driver had no choice but to do that. And I think I don't know what he did, but he was showing the Shabbos that he couldn't get home. So there've been horrible stories, and the Rabbonim has spoken about it, and they've tried to do all sorts of things, and unfortunately people don't always pay attention to it. So we will take that extra minute out and stress this point just to make the macha. Well, one thing I left out, we said that if a person is journeying to a place and the food will be ready for him, so then he doesn't have this restriction of three parcel. Three parcel, we said, is only someone who still needs to prepare his own food. But if the food is prepared for him, then he can travel late into the day. The Magen Avraham brings that already in his day, people cooked more than they needed. And therefore, if a person is coming unannounced for whatever reason, if it's within reason of understanding that they're going to have food for him, I mean, obviously, if a family of 10 decide to visit another family and they arrive at the door unannounced on Erev Shabbos, I somehow doubted that the hosting family is going to have enough food prepared to feed 10 people over Shabbos. But if a single person knocked on your door Friday afternoon and said, oh, I'm in town, can I come to you? Chances are most people will have enough food to feed another mouth or two or three. And therefore, if that's what a person expects, then he can embark on a journey even without having notified his host in advance. Today, that's less of a problem because we do have communication and you can call people in advance. And those, as you can imagine, if you're traveling from city to city and it was a last-minute decision, you'd get there quicker than the post would get there if you decided to go. So there was hardly a chance of notifying them. Okay, that's the Gabe traveling. Some more restrictions of Erev Shabbos are Melach. Actually, not before that, we have Kviyas Soda. There's a mitzvah to eat on Shabbos, to eat with appetite, to enjoy your food, and that way you are Makayim the mitzvah. Only Shabbos, covered Shabbos, and therefore a person, what does Chazal say? Chochom enof v'roishay, a chochom, a wise man is someone who can think ahead, and therefore they give us guidelines how a person should be thinking ahead, how he should behave on a Friday, so that he should have te'ovan for the Friday night meal. So they divide it into three different categories of food. The standard is what we call a suda shirogil bo bimoisachol, a standard mealtime that a person has on a regular weekday. That is something that is permitted on a Friday and that we're not discussing. Then there's a suda shirogil bo bimoisachol. It's larger than a weekday meal. Interesting, I read an interesting story about a young couple that was involved in Kirov. And one of the common things that they came across was they'd invite guests for Shabbos, and that, you know, our Shabbos meals, Bli Ayin Hara, they're 3, 4, 5 courses, and people are not used to that. They usually have a 1, a 2 course meal. They didn't know that they've never been to a frum home for Shabbos and know that there's many courses coming. So they served the fish course, and the people are sitting there, they're eating the fish, and they're eating the fish, and they're eating the dips, and they're eating the challah, and comes out the soup, and they're like, whoa. So, okay, so they have the soup, and then when the main course comes out, they're like, wow, you didn't tell me there's all this food coming. I filled myself on the fish course already. So they learn to let their guests know that there's a multiple course meal ahead of them, and that's why there's they can take it accordingly. But that's how we make our Shabbos meals. That's a Suda she'ein rog above the Moisachol. That's a Suda that is larger than our standard meals, and that type of Suda you may not have on a Friday at any time of the day. And then the third type of food is something which is not a Suda, it's a snack. It's a small amount of food, even would be bread, but it's a small amount of bread or just fruit or a snack or some dish. Those are the three categories. How do they fit on the standard Shabbos? So, on a regular Friday till the last quarter of the day, that means till about 3 hours before the end of the day, the halacha is that you can have a Suda Shiragubab and Mimzachal. You can have a regular weekday Suda. Be after that time, after the ninth hour of the day, on the last 3 hours of the day, you should not have a regular meal, but you may snack, what we call less than a, even a little bit of bread would be mutter, but you may snack. A suda she'ena rogava b'moisachol, something larger than a weekday meal, that is also the whole day on Friday. Even in the morning, you may not have such a suda. So those are the basic rules. Now, there are exceptions to the rules, like everything else. Whenever we have a rule, we have exceptions. The exception to the rule is a suda mitzvah. Suda mitzvah is always considered a bigger meal than a weekday meal, and sometimes the suda mitzvah has times. When there's a bris on a Friday, the suda should be made the same day that the bris was made, a pidyon haben, and erusin. So the erusin, lemaisa, the pasuk discusses, well, no one says you have to get engaged on a Friday morning. You could have done on Thursday night, or you can wait for Moitzei Shabbos to make your suda erusin. So then, if they did get engaged on a Friday and they wanted to make a suda erusin, could be that that's considered a suda mitzvah bismano, but it's not recommended. But other cases of Suda Mitzvah Bismano, it would be, as I said, the Bris Mila and Pidyon HaBen, Purim that falls on Friday, or a Bar Mitzvah where they make a Boy Bayom Suda during the day. Usually it's done on a Thursday night, or even a Chasana. But that is, those who got married on Friday usually did that so that they could combine the Shabbos meal with the Chasana meal. So they got married in the afternoon and then did the two meals in one. It was originally taken on as a custom in order to save effort and money because they were very poor. So when you have a Suda mitzvah that you need to eat on a Friday, as I said, it's the time of the mitzvah, whether because it's Purim or because this man of the Bris Milah has come, whether it was a Bris Milah on the eighth day or even it was pushed off, the baby was sick, but now the baby's healthy, so you did it the first opportunity ended up on a Friday, you do the Bris on a Friday, one should make every effort to make the Suda in the morning, please start the Suda before Chatzos. If you can't, you may make it after Chatzos, but once it gets to after Tesha Shois, after it comes to the last quarter of the day, then you actually have a chiyuv to be mitzamtzem, to make it smaller, and try avoid that possibility at all costs. It's sometimes impossible. There's different scenarios where I can give you, for example, a baby that was sick, and then you have to wait a certain amount of time from when the baby has healed before you give the bris, and that's in we wait that as a 24-hour, 72-hour, or 7-day, and if he healed at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so the bris can only be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that can happen. Interesting, I saw brought down that although we passed that the last quarter of the day is 3 hours manios, that means the relative hours, so if a day is 12 hours, so then that would be 3 times 60 is 180 minutes. If the day is 14 hours long, when you divide it by 12, you get to hours that are 70 minutes, and that would be three of those hours would be 210 minutes. It would be a half an hour longer. So it would be 3.5 hours before Shkia. If that's the case in the winter, it gets 10 minutes shorter, so it would be 2.5 hours before Shkia. Nevertheless, they point out that in the winter, even though we pass them, Shas Manius, one should try avoid eating late in the day, even before the ninth hour has come, not to sit down to a meal. I also saw that the Chazon Ish never washed on bread on a Friday. It was personal chumra. We don't see it in halacha that there's a restriction not to eat bread on a Friday. He personally didn't. Because, as we said, Suda Shiragubo b'moisachol, if this is what you eat during the week, then you may have that on a Friday, as long as it's not after the ninth hour. The same issue comes up if you have Yom Tov before Shabbos or Shabbos before Yom Tov, that you have this mitzvah of eating the te'oven applies on Yom Tov like it applies on Shabbos. and therefore a person has to take that into account. Even if you have 2 days of Yom Tov and those type of things, you have to work out. So the Bosnian discuss, how can it be that you're going to be mitzamtim, you're going to be restricting yourself on one day Yom Tov, because the next day the best is to avoid the situation. The Minach Kamina, let me explain. If you have, like we just said, we had Shavuos was on Friday, and then following Friday we had Shabbos. So the Friday night meal has to be eaten at the oven. On Friday you have a mitzvah to eat a Yom Tov meal, which is a Siddus mitzvah. Siddus mitzvah we said you can do before Chatzos. Great. What happens? It's Shavuos. Shavuos everybody's sleeping till Chatzos. Now you want to make your Suda after Chatzos, and you want to eat again Friday night, again, you may make your Suda after Chatzos. The problem is that if it gets later than Teisha Shoes, if it's later than the last third of the day, then Taka, even though you've got a mitzvah, Suda mitzvah for Yom Tov, you should be mitzamtim, and that meal should be made smaller and kept to a minimum. You can have bread, but it's kept to a minimum in order to keep your Teh Oven for Friday night. The same thing in the converse, if you were to have a Yom Tov on a Sunday, so you have Shalosh Shudas on Shabbos afternoon, preferably that Shalosh Shudas should be started before Teh Shoshois. And if you're going to have it later, then to keep it small, so you can wash, you can have bread, you have Lech HaMishneh, but keep the meal small. Usually the Kehillah will send out a notification when that happens. When we have a Yom Tov on a Sunday, they'll tell you that the Shalosh Shudas should be eaten before this time, and if not, then smaller than usual. As we said, something which doesn't constitute a suda, it's a snack, can be had all day long, but once you makabel Shabbos, whether it's through lighting candles, whether because the time has arrived, or because you live in a town where everybody has been makabel Shabbos already, so the moment that Tzibur has been makabel Shabbos, then it's binding on you. Then once Shabbos has arrived, no more eating whatsoever, no eating, no drinking, not even water. Exceptions we'll discuss later. We'll discuss Kiddush. We'll talk about that. But basically, for now, we're just saying that once Shabbos comes in, no more eating or drinking. An interesting case I saw brought down is a Suddus Havra. Suddus Havra is the first meal that Abelim eat after the Leviah of a relative that they participated in, or that happened. And that meal traditionally should not belong to them. The food should be from someone else. So someone prepares the food for them and then brings it to them, and then they sit down and they have a meal. That's considered the Suddus Havra that an Avel has as his first meal after a Kvura. So what happens if there's a Kvura on a Friday afternoon and now it's now after Teh Shoshois? So this is not considered a Suddus Mitzvah, although there's a big Inyan to it, but it's an Inyan after all, it's a Minig. And we're not going to use a minig to be oiker the need to eat Lita Oven on Friday night, and therefore either avoid it or make it very small if it's late in the day. Okay, and now we'll get to another restriction on a Friday. So we spoke about not traveling too much on a Friday, not eating too much on a Friday, and not working too much on a Friday. This is a longer section. We'll just start it. Hashem will continue it next week. And that is that Chazal have told us not to get involved in melachos on a Friday so that you have time to prepare for Shabbos. When on a Friday and what type of melachos is what we'll discuss. Number one, from mincha time. Which mincha? There are possibly hold mincha gedolah, that would mean a half an hour after Chatzos, but the accepted psak is mincha katana. Mincha katana is 2.5 hours before Shkia. Is the Shah's manias, so at this time of year it is closer to 3 hours, in the winter it's closer to 2 hours, but that's when one should refrain from doing a malacha. What type of malacha? Malacha that is not related to Shabbos, and malacha that gets a person involved. Let's just give it the general rule without getting into details. We'll get into details soon. But those type of malachas, it's not really so much as to do with malachas as we know on Shabbos, is lamentation malachas that you can and can't do. It's more of a question of exertion and involvement in tircha that distracts you from what you need to do. And therefore, there will be exceptions to the rule, like every other rule that we've discussed. So we will say that someone who does malacha after this time, after mina mincha lamala, after mincha ktana, the possum say eneroi simen bracha, he's not going to be successful. It's not an isur as an isur like that a person would get malchus or something like that, but rather it's a geder, it's a guideline that Chazal set down, and they have taken away the slacha and the bracha that a person can get from not listening to them. You did a malacha and you saw the fruits of your work. So what are you telling me, Chazal say, Eneros in bracha? I just built a pergola. Now I have a pergola to have for my sukkah. So although it's now 3 months away from sukkah, so it wasn't at all needed for me to do now, but I found that I had the time and I did it Friday afternoon just before Shabbos came in. So what are you telling me, Eneros in bracha? I have a beautiful pergola. So Chazal say, when they say Eneros in bracha, it means on the collective stand is that you might see that your pergola is standing and looking beautiful, but somewhere else, a person will lose out. And if Chazal say Eneros in bracha, they mean it. And therefore, it could be that some other thing you do will fail as a result of your working on Erev Shabbos. You don't know when you did something else that went wrong. Now you think, things go wrong. No, things go wrong. There's a cheshbon. Everything we do has a cheshbon. And this could be because a person worked. He put up his pergola on an Erev Shabbos. So when he did something else, on a Wednesday, it was unsuccessful. Or if it's a question of profit and loss, he made a profit on the deal that he made on a Friday afternoon, comes Monday, he did something and he loses from it, that counterbalances. That's what Chazal mean by Eneros in the bracha. And at Kerekah, they say that if you see someone doing that type of malacha on Erev Shabbos, the correct thing is to tell him off. At Kerekah, that's based in Amukhur, to stop a person. How we would carry that out today is a different question, but that at least we puts the idea into perspective how chomer we consider a person being doing things that are not related to Shabbos and avoiding preparing for what he should be doing for Shabbos. Some exceptions to the rules would be an employee who has fixed working hours. He works from 8 to 5. When all days it was sunrise to sunset, so he is contracted out to his employer, and therefore he can't just leave work early. So when can he leave? We say lehalacha, he can leave work so that he can get home in order to fill up his urn and preheat it before Shabbos and fry some fish for Shabbos. Also the time it takes to put a dough into the oven. It's not much time, it's 10-15 minutes. So essentially, if he's employed and he wants to have an excuse to leave early, the bare minimum is that he needs to be home 10-15 minutes before candlelighting, before the sign, before candlelighting, before shkia, depending on how you look at it. Lechayis, before the time he's going to be Mekabel Shabbos, which should be before shkia. Obviously, the correct thing is if he has nothing in his house to eat, then he also has to be home in enough time to cook something. And if he needs to do any other preparations, it's time for that. And the correct way for an employee is to tell his employer in advance that he is showing a Shabbos and he's going to need time on a Friday afternoon. And he would like to have as part of his contract that he can leave, especially in the winter, that he can leave early in order to get home. And if the employer is gracious enough, then he should include in the contract that he would not work past Minchat Kana, this time 2.5 hours before Shkia, should be his latest cutoff point if he has the ability of doing so. Someone who's poor and has no money to make Shabbos, so for him there's no restriction, he can work till Shabbos, till the last minute, obviously not beyond the last minute, enough time to get home and do what he the very last minute, but to him we don't give him any restrictions because his work is lechavod Shabbos, because even though he's doing something else, but essentially every penny that he earns can go towards his tzarka Shabbos that will allow him to work the whole day. There's more coming, but we'll come to the Mashiach, so in Mitzvah we'll continue.